St. Paul went out of his way to encourage and praise the people of the Thessalonian church, even though things were certainly not perfect there. But Jesus seems to go out of his way to insult and criticize a certain group of people, the scribes and Pharisees, whom he calls hypocrites, blind guides, and finally, children of hell. This is, of course, not the sweet, gentle Jesus that many people, both inside the church and out, would like to make him into. What a friend we have in Jesus, goes one old hymn for children. So what makes Jesus so angry, and why should it matter to us? Well, these are the first two in this gospel passage of what are called the seven woes, or warnings about judgment to people that will befall people who lead others astray. It's the strongest language Jesus uses to this point in Matthew's gospel. Now, we kind of know what a hypocrite is. That's someone whose actions are not consistent with his words. And we could probably say that there's none of us who, at some point, at some time, do not act inconsistently. The question for us is, what is Jesus referring to? The most damning thing for them is that they know better, those leaders, those Pharisees, or at least they should know better. There is no excuse. In the first half of this gospel passage is the woe, or the judgment. The Pharisaic interpretation and teaching of the law, in a way, inoculates people against the true law and true worship of God, and therefore locks, as by a key, people out of the kingdom. And in the second half of the passage, Jesus uses two sort of parallel, because they illustrate the same problem, examples of what these Pharisees or these blind guides do. I was reminded as I reflected on it of the second commandment, the second of the Ten Commandments, one which frequently gets kind of glossed over a bit as maybe a little less important. The first commandment, of course, is thou shalt not have any strange gods before me, which obviously is a commandment against idolatry. And the third commandment, to keep holy the Sabbath. The second commandment, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, stands out for me. In this passage, Jesus used the term swearing. For us, it is using a bad word or expressing God's name in anger. And we would say this goes against the second commandment. But in Hebrew culture, swearing is simply making what would be to us a commitment, like a contract. But instead of a written agreement using a lawyer or the signatures of witnesses, they would swear by the witness of a holy object. And the second key term here is, from the commandment itself, is in vain. And that means to serve no purpose. Do not use the name of the Lord in vain. We make God's name useless when we are not using it as a sign of worship or petition or praise or sorrow. We take what is holy and we apply it to something which is ordinary, or a fancy word for that is profane. We have the sacred, which is holy, and the profane, which is ordinary, and so we call it profanity. The uselessness of their oaths are because they are swearing by what is valuable in the material world, gold and a sacrifice on the altar. It's a kind of idolatry, like when people worship the golden calf. And Jesus condemns their focus on the things that are of value to humans and demands that they refocus on what is holy. And in a way, we can relate to these things, even though there are many things about this gospel passage which require a kind of an understanding of Hebrew culture. But we can relate to some of it. For example, the sanctuary, the place of God's presence, and the altar, the place of the sacrifice of our Lord Jesus Christ, who held back nothing from us in order to unlock salvation for all of us. Now, anyone who presumes to teach or present the Christian faith must realize that we have to teach Christ and not our own version of the gospel. In a diocese, the bishop is the one who is responsible for all teaching. Those of us who teach do so only under the bishop's authority. I'm not free to teach something different about our faith than what he does. Now, I feel fortunate because I've had two bishops under whom I feel privileged to teach, but all of us are called to be teachers of the good news of Jesus Christ. We celebrate St. Monica today, who kept her focused on Christ. She did not let the trials of her life deter her from the task at hand, to convert those closest to her to Christ. And it didn't matter that it took a long time or there were many trials in the process. We love St. Monica because she unlocked the kingdom of heaven for her family members with great patience and perseverance. And when she had accomplished that for which she believed God had set her the task, there was nothing left for her to do, and she was ready to go. I recently visited a dying friend who said, "I guess the Lord is telling me my work here is done." And he said, "But I'm at peace with it." So for us, it is always about listening to the Lord. What task has he set for us? How can we be consistent with what he has done for us in how we present the Christian faith to others? By our lives, and by what we say, and by what we do.